This week on the Unabated Podcast, Matt Modi stops by to talk about betting on props for NBA, Major League Baseball, and more. It's a great show. Let's get to it.
If the guy goes unabated, that's a new word, unabated. That's too big a word. That's like mayonnaise. I'm assuming that's a bigger
Hello, everyone, and welcome on into the Unabated Podcast. I'm Thomas Viola, and joining me, as always, Mr. Unabated himself, Captain Jack Andrews. Jack, it's another great week here. We are getting ever so closer to that sports drought of the summer, but we still have plenty to talk about. NBA playoffs are going on. Baseball's in full swing. We have a great guest today to talk about both of them in Matt Modi. I'm very excited for this conversation, and a big thing is Matt does not do things the unabated way. He's not a top-down bettor. He is looking at things and doing a little bit more of a qualitative approach. But the reality is, yeah, different people bet different ways and still find success.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing about sports betting that I'd like to drive home to some people is there's not one true path to success in sports betting. There's a lot of ways to get an edge at sports betting. You know, we talk about top-down, there's bottom-up. There is being an account wrangler for people. There is being a mover for people. There's people that just specialize on props, which is what Matt largely does. And even when you get into props, it's like a Markov chain here. Now there's many ways to beat props. There are ways to use odd screens and simulators and projection systems to beat props, but there are ways to beat props just by finding outliers in the market. And then there's what Matt does, and we'll let him kind of explain how he approaches prop betting, but it's different. And I think the benefit here for Tom, you and I, as well as all of our listeners, is when you listen to someone who does it a different way, it expands your mind and gets you thinking about thinking outside the box, thinking about different ways to get an edge. And one of the things that I've always found in my career as an advantage player is I'm always curious how somebody else is doing it, because I might be able to adapt that into my skill set and find new ways to get an edge. So I think having Matt on here is going to be fun. I hope we can get more guests like this that are doing it a different way, and everyone can learn from them.
Yeah, I will say from personal experience, like, Matt has helped me improve my NBA prop betting, which was by far my most profitable angle so far this year. Most of what I do is just using the unbated prop simulator. I have projections, use our market-based projections as a blend, and I just go through and bet that way. But I definitely started to find more success once I was talking with him more. And, you know, one of the things we talk about is, do you need to know ball to be a good sports bettor and to be an effective sports bettor? The answer is unequivocally no, you don't. But it can help, especially when you're doing things like trying to exploit prop markets, which are much more beatable than main lines. I don't think that's a hot take to be saying. I think there's more edges to be found there. And it really does come down to, well, sometimes some of this can help. I know during the middle of the season, I was talking with him, I was saying, like, yeah, I'm having some trouble with some of these guys, like, and I'm talking about betting a game. I think it was Portland. And he's like, oh, yeah, I don't bet Portland players because you never know who's going to play. And they're always doing funky things with their lineup. And that right there, that's something that's like, OK, to a degree, you want to be able to know ball. You want to have some of this stuff in mind where you can say, OK, well, I do know that this team's rotation is going to be funky and that's going to affect how I want to bet. Even when you are just betting blind numbers off project, well, not blind numbers, but numbers off projections, like, it can really help out your process.
Yeah. No, this, look forward to this conversation.
Absolutely. All right. I think with that, let's get to it.
Let's do it.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome on into the show, sports bettor, Pokemon extraordinaire, and more, Jedi Modi himself. Matt, how are you doing today, my friend? It's great to have you on.
I'm doing well. I don't think I've ever been introduced as Pokemon extraordinaire before. That made me very, very happy and excited. So no, I'm doing great and much better after that introduction.
Hey, I mean, if the shoe fits, you must wear it. And the whole reason that I started my Pokemon Emerald playthrough again was because you were the one who pushed me to do it. So I appreciate you for that. That was a fun little divergence while we were dealing with the sports betting drought that we had for a while. And let's face it, it's going to continue well into the summer here. But we do have some sports to talk about as well here. We're well into the NBA playoffs at this point, getting through that first round right now. We have Major League Baseball going in full swing at this point. And it's been a good NBA season for you for sure. But would you say, to give people a little bit of a background about you and your betting, what is it that you focus on and what is it that you do?
Yeah, I focus mostly like 90, 99% on player props specifically. That's just where I've been able to find the biggest edge for me personally. Not that obviously like edges can be only found on player props, just for whatever reason, my brain, that works best for me. I think I just found better success focusing on player versus team matchups as opposed to team versus team matchups for whatever reason. Sometimes I'll do during the NBA or NFL season, I'll do like 3 to 5 mainline plays a day. Or for a week, I guess I should say. And it did not go well to begin the year, started to go a little bit better at the end. And then in the playoffs, there are certain system plays that I will play for main lines specifically, not as much matchup based, just like I said, just a system play. But yeah, I would say mostly focusing on player props. And I found the most success within NBA specifically in that niche.
And when it comes to the, go ahead, Jack.
No, I was just going to say, so one of the things that we're kind of delving into as a series here on our podcast is how different people do different things and still have an edge at sports betting. So Matt, if you could kind of walk us through your process, your approach. I may interject here and there to just kind of drill down some questions on it, but let's walk through your process.
Yeah, we can go basically point by point. I have a couple of different bullet points. I think the most important thing, if people are asking for my advice, is that, there's not one single source of truth. Whatever source, website, metric, projection, whatever you use, there's not one thing where it's like, oh, this website, whatever, says it's a good bet. I'm going to bet it 100% of the time. For me personally, there's like 5 to 7 different sources that I look at. And if there's agreement among the majority or maybe one really big edge that's only on one of the 7, but I really like, I might bet that. There's a lot of different stuff that I look at. And I would say the most important thing is just the odds. Just because I like something at plus 120 doesn't mean I'm going to like it at plus 100. And it's the same thing. Like if I like something at minus 120, I'm not going to like it at minus 140. So I think a lot of times there'll be a play that I like. And if the odds get nuked too much, then I'll just avoid it. And if it hits, so be it. But I think that more often than not, if you're playing the odds, that will work out in the long run. I think we can all kind of agree on that. I know Unabated is obviously very odd shopping heavy, but I think for me specifically, there are two things that I do more so than the average sports bettor that I think has given me the biggest edge. Number one, and this is going to sound really stupid, but it's literally just betting on plays that are plus money. I think so many people, especially people that aren't in the know, will just avoid a play that's plus money. And I used to do that before I knew what I was doing. I basically, if I was researching, I'd be like, oh, this is plus 120. I'm not going to bet it because it's not going to hit. It's unlikely to hit. And I think people just need to look at it in terms of like what percent do you need to win the bet versus the odds, right? Like you could bet plus 500, win, I don't know, like 15, I forget whatever the odds are, percent of the time, and be green in the long run. And I know a lot of people that are like, that's plus 150. I'm not going to play it. And like, by all means, that's fine, because I'll just get better at odds on plus money plays. And then the second one, and this is really what I've built the most of my brand around, along with plus money plays, is this is especially for the NBA. It doesn't quite work the same with baseball, but it's basically just betting the opposite of what has recently happened. And recently can be the last game, the last 3 games, the last 10 games. I don't have a specific number on it, but I can't tell you how many times I've played something. And then someone will comment, he's only hit this in 2 of his last 10 games. And not to sound mean, but like I could not care less. There's not a single thing I care less about than how frequently a player's hit it in his last 10 games or whatever. I think that the general public falls in love with recent trends and they just expect that to continue. And my favorite example that I give is like a 40% 3-point shooter in the NBA doesn't shoot 2 of 5, doesn't shoot 4 of 10. Every single game. They're going to go 8 of 9 one game, and then they're going to have 4 games where they make 1 out of 5, whatever it may be. And I would say that anecdotally, the plays that people hate the most, I have the highest success rate on those plays specifically. Those are the two main things. I'll pause. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Tom, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, that's something that Derek Hardy and I harp on all the time. When we're doing our prop shows, whether it was NFL or Major League Baseball that we've got going on right now, tune in Thursdays, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern time. But it's that people are a slave to box scores and box score recency bias, where they look at, oh, well, his last five games, he hasn't done this, so I'm not going to bet it here. And it's something that can trip you up so much because, yeah, you're looking at way too small of a sample and way too tiny of a cross section to really be getting any meaningful information out of that. Not that there isn't meaningful information to be gained there, but you need it in a larger context.
Exactly. Sometimes recent stats matter. If there's like been a change, a starting lineup change, an injury change, whatever, recent stats can matter. But I think people just default to that and will start the research process like, oh, this has hit 7 out of the last 10 games. It's probably a good bet, which maybe, but it just, it takes more than that.
So I guess that's how you start. That's your, where you say, okay, well, there's a good angle to look at. Where do you dig into next? Are you going to stat sites? Do you have your own databases? Do you have your own modeling?
No, I don't have my own modeling. That's kind of a personal side project that I'm working on. Turns out it's really hard to create models that are better than the sportsbooks models. Not to just give you guys flowers, the unabated market-based projections are like the main source of projections that I will look at. There are a couple other sites that have projections that I don't trust for whatever reason. The reason is because I don't think they're good. For whatever reason, they're not good. Outside of that projection stuff, I think for NBA specifically, I really try to drill as detailed as I can into the specific matchup. So instead of just looking, this team gives up a lot of three-pointers. Okay, well, where do they give up a lot of three-pointers? In the NBA, it can be catch and shoot. It can be pull-up. It could be on the corner. It can be above the break. Do they leave a lot of shooters wide open? What type of shooters do they leave wide open? No one's going to leave Steph Curry wide open because he's Steph Curry, but he takes a lot of wide open jump shots because of how they run him around so many screens and stuff in the offense. And I also try to find plays that I think has a high ceiling potential. Now that's pretty subjective. You know, what I think a player could have a high ceiling, someone else might not agree with outside of projections, but it's rare they are going to have good projections that are so aggressively different than what the sports books offer. If they do, then that's honestly a red flag for me. If it's such a big difference between projections and the sports books. For NBA specifically, I try to find, like I said, ceiling potential and then bet up to what I think that ceiling is, just lowering the unit size. So if someone's 3-point total is 2.5, I'll bet them over 2.5, 3.5, 4.5, and just lower the unit size. And then especially for NBA, I try to avoid betting after outlier performances, positive or negative. Sometimes I'll miss out on someone in a cold streak, or I'll miss out on someone in a hot streak, but those are the types of plays that I'm okay missing because outlier performances are outliers for that reason. And expecting that to continue is something that is tough. And, you know, maybe an NBA player is taking the next step, but if someone's averages 25 points per game and they just score 40, that means they have to have a game with 15 in order for that to even out. So, I know this is a lot of NBA specific. That's just where I'm going because I've had the most success.
So you mentioned player ceiling, and the converse of that is player floor, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is something that a lot of DFS players are familiar with, because when you're doing traditional DFS, DFS 1.0, as the kids call it, it's very much about who has a lower ceiling and a higher floor for cash games, and a higher ceiling and a higher ceiling really for the GPPs.
Right.
How does that play into your prop betting process? You talked a little bit about laddering there, mm-hmm. another term the kids use. How does that play into, are you always looking at player ceiling and relative performance? Now you said you don't have a model, but are you able to kind of figure that out by eyeballing it?
Yeah, I would say it's either the ceiling potential or the high floor potential. So, you know, if they're over or under, I'm using the 3-point props because that's where I say I look the most. If they hit two a lot of the times, but they rarely go over the three number, then maybe the ceiling potential is not there. Whereas if there's a player that will go, is really streaky, can have days where he makes 7 and then 3 games where he doesn't make any, then it's kind of like, okay, if you have him off a spot where he's missed 3 games in a row where he hasn't shot well, maybe you can find a ceiling play there. So I think it depends on the player, depends what their floor potential is, depends what their ceiling potential is. I think it's tough to really give a detailed and scientific answer, because I would say a lot of it for me, without having a model that basically decides all my betting plays or not. It can be really subjective. And like I said, what I deem someone to have a high ceiling, someone could disagree with. And, you know, we could both be right in some cases.
When it comes to the actual bets that you're making, and I know we're focusing a lot on NBA, so I'm curious how it changes sport to sport, especially with us getting into baseball season. Sure. But do you find that you're having more success? Are you targeting overnight lines? And I know it's especially much more likely with NBA. Are you looking at right before game time? What are the times that you're really focusing on?
Yeah. So for the regular season, I really don't look until the morning because props come out too late. I'm an early morning bed kind of guy, so I'm not normally able to get anything. For the playoffs, it's different because there's longer time in between games and props come out as soon as possible. 90% of the time, you're going to get the best line if you're betting it early. Really, the only difference, the only time that changes is based on injury news. There were like 3 to 5 guys in the regular season where if X player was out, bet on this player. And I just like, yeah, the books are smart. They're not always smart. And I think there's some situations where they just didn't properly adjust. Like my favorite example is D'Angelo Russell assists when LeBron's out. They would always price it at 6.5 or 7.5. He would always go 8 or more often than not hitting 10. And they just never adjusted for whatever reason. So there's certain examples like that where it can be good to wait, but more often than not, the early line you get is probably going to be the best line you'll get as well, if it's a good play, at least.
Let's transition a little bit into baseball.
Sure.
What is the Dom report? And why did I have to say that, Tom? Why is that the question I got? But what is the Dom report?
Yeah, it's my favorite home run predictions for the day. I really just caught fire naming it the Dom report for obvious reasons, because we're all children at heart. But I mean, it's just a lot more fun to say the Dom report than here are my favorite MLB home run bets of the day. Last year, it was really what catapulted me to decide to do what I'm doing now. This year, it has not been successful, but home runs are down significantly across the board, even if you take into account weather. Like, even with weather being colder and carry being the lowest in April, what was a home run last year has not been a home run this year. I've probably been too slow to recalibrate my expectations with home runs. So I've kind of taken a little bit of a break on those specifically. But to answer your question, the Dong report equals home run predictions, home run bets.
But that's when it comes to the slow start to it and what we're looking at. Yeah, it's like, it's okay to take a break. We've talked about it so many times on this show about how Jack and I aren't betting Major League Baseball props for another couple weeks here. I don't know when you're planning on getting started, Jack, if you want to enlighten people on that. But it is very much a time of figuring this stuff out, because you're completely right. I've seen multiple people talking about how dead the ball is, to the point where it's like, what, 2021 or 2022 levels when it was at its lowest? And we're matching that right now.
It's even worse than the 22 level dead ball. And it's, and for every reason, the MLB will never admit it. Scientifically, there's no other argument to be made that that it's a dead ball. Maybe they didn't do it on purpose. They probably did. And they're probably going to change it at some point, and we'll know when baseball start flying out of the stadium again. But yeah, I mean, to me, it's hard to find an argument other than it's a dead baseball.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I saw some of the things that you've tweeted. There are some of the things that I've tweeted. It definitely is, you know, for our audience that might not be familiar with the baseball fuckery that's been going on, for lack of a better word, and, you know, sometimes the stitches have been very tight, and that reduces drag, which makes the ball fly further. There was a year where it seemed like the surface of the ball was a lot smoother and tighter. The leather drawn across the yarn pit, or whatever they call it, was tighter, and pitchers couldn't get as good a grip. And so there wasn't as much break on their ball, which combined with the stitching, you know, affects how much wind resistance there's going to be in just the pitch, the 60 feet, 6 inches. So there's a lot that goes into that. And a lot of really intelligent people, literal astrophysicists, have analyzed these baseballs and kind of come up with, yes, this is a major factor, to the point now where StatCast actually tracks drag coefficient, but they're tracking drag coefficient of batted balls. They're not tracking necessarily pitch drag coefficient, yep, which is a big part of it. If the ball's not breaking as much, that's a big meatball for the batter to slam. So the ball has been a big point of contention for a lot of bettors for a lot of years. It's one of the reasons that I have not been betting many props yet. But what do you do personally when you get in a position here where there's an unknown that you cannot quantify. And yes, you're going to take a break for a while, Matt, but where do you go from there?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's honestly something that I'm still trying to figure out on my end. Luckily, I still have NBA, I still have playoffs, nightly basketball games, so I'm still able to keep the machine running. Yeah, I mean, I think in general, not just MLB specific, but I think it can be, I mean, not I think, it can be really profitable to get on a trend early, whatever the trend may be. For NBA, a lot of times, I think it was a couple of years ago, they totals were down significantly because they stopped calling certain fouls. And then this year, starting in like February, it was the same thing. They just stopped calling fouls, and they refused to admit that that's what they were doing, but it was clear. So I think staying water is a lot of time, like a lot of an industry term, stay water. Don't fall in love with something that has worked previously, which I think it took me. I wanted it to work so badly because it's just so electric when you get a home run to hit that I so badly wanted to figure it out. So I probably waited too long to pivot than I did. Also, part of it is just as a content creator, you want to keep something going. Like you don't want to just not have anything out there. But I think like, this is not going to be the only year where something is down, whether it's home runs or whatever. So I think it's important to always take a step to kind of audit your own process and not fall in love with what worked 2 weeks ago, last year, whatever, and figure out what could be different. So like for me, I've been really looking into strikeout props. Like, okay, if home runs are down, if the ball's not carrying as much, the stitching, honestly, I hadn't even heard of. So that is something that I'll probably just, I don't know how much research there even is out there on that. But I've been looking into strikeout props more and seeing maybe, okay, if I can't find the edge with home runs, is there an edge to be on strikeout props? Or maybe it's different types of batter props that's not home run specific. I have not yet found the solution for that. I wasn't planning on really looking into it until May, because that's close to when the first round of the NBA playoffs end. So there'll be less NBA games, more time to focus on MLB. But yeah, it's not, I mean, it's a little bit of a cop out of an answer, but I just don't know at this point in time.
I mean, when you talk about trends and you talk about like changing things up and looking at new things, the type of trends you're talking about aren't things like, oh, this player has shot 30% from three over the last 10 years. The type of trends you're talking about are the actual quantifiable trends that we talk about on this show of being things that actually matter. Like, hey, they are not calling these fouls, or the ball is very clearly dead. These are things that you can actually quantify and say, hey, this is a trend that you have to take into account when you're on monitoring your betting.
Sometimes trends matter. And in this case, when it's league wide, when it's not a specific player, when it's everybody's holding a baseball, it's literally called baseball, then yeah, that's important.
I mean, my own personal thinking is that I'm looking for when teams start to talk about how the ball's not flying. Right now it's the fans that are, the sabermetric guys that are all talking about it. But when the teams start talking about it, then there's going to be a little bit of a change in how they approach the game. They're not going to be swinging for the fences if it's going to be harder to hit that home run. They're going to be swinging for base hits and trying to get whatever they can into the field. And that changes some props as well. You can bet on total hits in a game. You can bet on which team will have more hits if maybe there's a team that's enlightened to this while another team isn't. So there's always things that you can pick up on that you're, like you're saying, that basically become trends, but also that, can kind of leak out and help you guide to where your next prop is.
Yeah, maybe it's maybe or sorry to just to kind of this is I just thought of this, but maybe it's stolen bases. Maybe teams try to play small ball more. Singles, stolen bases, and that brings you home. That's not a market that I've looked at. It probably would have been better last year when they made the base size bigger. But yeah, I mean, just I kind of just got the idea. Yeah, maybe it's stolen bases. Maybe, yeah, stuff like that.
It is patently absurd on its face, the fact that we even have to have a discussion about this. Like no other sport, every other sport is saying, oh
I
yeah, we want
know.
more scoring, we want to figure this out. Baseball, they're just like, nah, we're just gonna deaden the ball. Let's decrease scoring.
Imagine if they changed the basketball or changed the football. It's crazy. Yeah, baseball is a league of its own.
Yeah. I would absolutely love it if they just started messing with footballs, though. You got guys like kicking 70-yard field goals like it's nothing.
And I think this is actually a victim of efficiency, because Rawlings, which Major League Baseball owns Rawlings, and they create the baseballs. They're created in Costa Rica, I believe, And they wanted to make it a more efficient process, so it wasn't so much a manual labor process. Well, you get machines doing things that used to be done by hand, and they're going to do it more expertly. They're going to make those seams tighter. So there was a lot of things that went into it that I think are just victims of modernization or efficiency.
That's interesting.
Let's swing back to the NBA playoffs a little bit. How does your process change in the playoffs?
Yeah, so this year we're 4 days into it, and admittedly, it's been hit or miss. Like I'm up slightly, very, very slightly. Last year, especially towards the end of the playoffs, I had a really successful run. There are a couple system plays for mainlines that I know it's not smart to blindly bet something, but that I will look at heavily, which is like teams that are down 2-0 win game three 60% of the time. The home team that loses game one, which didn't happen this year, they win and cover game two. It was like 70%. It was a crazy number. I forget the exact number. So there are certain system plays that I look at for the playoffs. I also, a lot of times, betting the opposite of what happened in the previous game works. Like game one went over, look at the under. Again, it's not perfect. It's not going to hit 100% of the time, but stuff like that. But what really worked for me last year was looking not necessarily at the box score, but potential assists, rebound opportunities, shot attempts. That's something that is generally sticky game over game. And that's something that if someone has a bad shooting game, I'm going to want to bet them the next game. Someone has a really efficient potential assist to assist ratio, I'm going to want to fade that the next game. And then other than that, it's a lot of times people will look at minutes in the regular season that does not equal minutes in the playoffs. There are certain rotation players that just don't play in the playoffs. So I think efficiency goes down across the board, but it specifically goes down for role players and even more so on the road. And they might also play fewer minutes than they play in the regular season. So it can be a different beast for sure, especially at the end of the regular season. It'd be some of these people that are playing, nobody's even heard of. And you could really find an edge if you really dig into it, which is not the case in the playoffs. But yeah, a lot of it is just honestly, this really, really good player had a bad efficient shooting game in game one. I'm going to bet his point total over in game two. It has been more hit or miss this year than it was last year. But again, it's 4 days deep, so I'm not going to make any sweeping judgments based off the 4 days.
Yeah, we haven't seen enough yet to kind of give credence to any of that. One note I'll make there is, that team down 0-2 heading back home, which we see, I think, in like over half of the series that are going on right now, that angle is definitely factored into the lines these days. And you can see
100%.
that. Yeah, you can see that the first half and first quarter numbers. And people will be posting this on Twitter and whatnot, where you look at a team is favored by the visitor is maybe, well, maybe the home team is favored by like two, but in the first half, they're favored by like six, or the first quarter, they're favored by like three. It's kind of ridiculous. It's just almost to the point of overcorrecting now. And I think that's where maybe there would be some value is playing against the angle that everyone thinks they know of the team down 0-2 is going to have a great performance at home in game three. There might be some opportunity on the other side of that.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, so we're recording this Wednesday, 24th, whatever this comes out. Tomorrow's games on Thursday, every single team, like away team, is down, or I guess I should say the underdog in the series is down 2-0. All three of them are favored, every single one. The Sixers are all 4.5 point favorites. They're down 0-2. The Magic are 1.5 point favorites. They're down 0-2. And then the Lakers is more so a pick 'em, but their Lakers money line is not plus money. And like I said, all three of those teams are down 0-2. So to your point, this year, the value, the trend might be doing the opposite of what historically has been working.
Are you thinking about doing any WNBA at all? Like, is it that much different of a game?
So 2 years ago, I found a lot of success literally just line shopping. I put in no analysis in the game, the matchups themselves. I just tried to pick off stale lines. It's last year, I tried to do the same thing and quickly learned that the public had caught up and that there are more people betting WNBA. So the lines are a lot sharper. So I'm planning on getting into it. I have a 1 year hit, 1 year not hit success rate with the WNBA. So we'll see how things go in year three.
Well, of course, you can always check out the NBA, the WNBA player projections that we will have right here at Unabated for the season. Got to plug that in. But Matt, thank you so much for being with us here today. I just plugged Unabated, but let's plug you here for a bit. Where can people find you and the awesome work you're doing?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at my Twitter handle, Jedi Modi. I might have to change it to Pokemon Extraordinaire Modi, but that's not the case right now. Everything, all the work that I do, you can find if you go to my Twitter. So I would recommend checking that out. And then YouTube, the freelancing stuff I'm doing, you can find from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us here today, Matt. It has been a pleasure. Looking forward to talking more Pokemon with you and our friend Dan Koob in our Kooba Troopas group chat. And of course, again, people can check you out on Twitter at Jedi Modi. It has been a pleasure. We'll have you on again real soon. Best of luck rebounding on the Dongs this season, and best of luck in the NBA playoffs as they continue on here. But for now, that is going to do it for us. Once again, you know the drill. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, give us that 5-star rating and review. If you like your friends, tell them about the podcast. If you don't like people, trick your enemies into listening to us instead. If you don't like the show, it's been a pleasure being with you here today. Check out unabated.com. Use the link in the bio to set up a one-on-one demo conversation, which will be most likely with me. I'll walk you through the tools personally and show you how everything at unabated.com works and set you up with a nice free trial for your troubles. But in the meantime, best of luck, everybody. We'll see you next episode. Let's cash some tickets. We'll see you next time.